at 5:44. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. President Trump is on his way to a private fundraiser in Dallas at this hour, where he hopes to raise $10 million for his reelection campaign. That's after he held a roundtable discussion at Gateway Church in North Dallas, a conversation that focused on race relations and policing. And it featured various administration officials, as well as local police leaders like Vernell Dooley. He's the police chief in Glen Heights, a suburb south of Dallas.
We need more training. We need more specific training that's dedicated to service of everyone we interact with on a daily basis.
At the roundtable, the president was critical of calls from activists and some lawmakers to divert funding away from police departments.
Radical efforts to defund, dismantle, and disband the police. They want to get rid of the police forces. They actually want to get rid of it. And that's what they do, and that's where they'd go. And you know that. Because at the top position, there's not going to be much leadership. There's not much leadership left. Instead, we have to go the opposite way. We must invest more energy and resources in police training.
The Dallas Police Chief, Dallas County Sheriff, and Dallas County District Attorney were not invited to the roundtable. Dallas Mayor Eric Johnson was invited but did not attend because of prior commitments. If Dallas were to reduce funding for police, it could use the money to invest in arts groups. So says a 10-point plan authored by a coalition of activists calling on the city to divest from the police department and move toward community-led solutions to public safety. Reverend Frederick Haynes of the Friendship West Baptist Church helped write the proposal.
When our children, teenagers, have an opportunity to discover talents and gifts, that means if I'm doing this, I don't have time to do that.
The plan was discussed last night at a meeting hosted by several theater groups. It also calls for increased funding for recreation centers, libraries, and cultural centers. While many are calling for defunding of police departments across the country, some Texas advocates say it should happen in schools, too. Ms. KERA's Bill Zeeble reports the superintendent and some trustees in Dallas ISD say it won't happen in Dallas schools.
Groups like the Texas Organizing Project and Disability Rights Texas hope to ride the wave of outrage over the death of George Floyd at the hands of a white Minneapolis police officer. Pam Mixon, with Disability Rights Texas, says just as protesters want city police forces defunded, her organization wants the same of school district police departments. Among the 1,000-plus independent districts in Texas, a fifth have their own police. Mixon says the money should be diverted to improve social and mental health services. She says disabled students and black kids get the brunt of bad policing.
With the cases that we receive from parents, there are students being harassed, terrorized, being threatened.
Mixon says racism is at the heart of some concerns. She cites an incident in Dallas from 3 years ago.
So a 7-year-old in the Dallas ISD was tased, handcuffed by a school resource officer after a verbal outburst in class.
That's what the child's family said. But Dallas Superintendent Michaelina Hosa says it couldn't have happened that way.
Our police department has never had tasers, ever. So I don't know how that student could have got tased.
Hinojosa says while the letter from the organization offers some valuable criticism, there are also serious inaccuracies. He will not recommend the district dismantle its police department of more than 200.
Now, when we had Sandy Hook and we had Santa Fe, people were saying, hire more police officers, hire more, get more security. In our bomb program, we're going to increase our security. You need to balance things.
Hinojosa points out Dallas school police don't work for the city, but that's often the case in other states. Dallas school board member Edwin Flores says district police are trained to work with students, which helps weaken the so-called school-to-prison pipeline.
If we didn't have our own PD, every single referral, we'd be calling the DPD. They would do whatever they would do at that level versus allowing us to handle this within the schools and having our own system of restorative justice.
Trustee Joyce Foreman, who frequently disagrees with Flores, agrees with him here. She would also keep the school police.
A lot of it is for safety and security for our schools, our students, our parents, our teachers, our employees.
Superintendent Hinojosa acknowledges the protest marches have forced a new focus on policing. But when it comes to the district divesting itself of its police department, as the organizations demand, he says, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm Bill Zeeble in Dallas.
We turn now to the latest on the coronavirus in Texas. Another day, another record high number of new COVID-19 cases in Dallas County. Medical officials reported 312 new cases today, beating yesterday's single-day high. The total number of confirmed cases across Dallas County now exceeds 13,200. Officials in Dallas also reported 3 new deaths today. Elsewhere in North Texas, Tarrant County announced 225 new cases, although its website notes that an increase in new cases may be partially due to a lab reporting issue. Tarrant County also recorded 1 additional death this afternoon. Collin County added 7 new cases today, and Denton County has announced 33 new cases. Both counties now have more than 1,600 cases of COVID-19 countywide. Despite the coronavirus pandemic, there's a hotel in Juarez that's filling up with guests, but these aren't tourists on vacation. They're people who tried to cross into the U.S., but for a variety of reasons have been sent back. Migrant shelters trying to control the spread of COVID-19 can't take new people in immediately. As KERA's Mallory Falk reports, this establishment, which organizers call a filter hotel, offers a safe space for people to do 2-week quarantines before moving on to long-term shelter.
The Hotel Flamingo is really more of a motel with lots of open outdoor space. When you arrive, there's a whole disinfection process led by hotel coordinator Rosa Mani Arias. First, you step inside a tray filled with diluted bleach to clean off the soles of your shoes. Then you scrub with soap at a hand washing station, followed up with a big squirt of hand sanitizer. Next, you're given a fresh face mask, and finally, Mani sprays your shoes with an alcohol mixture. Mani is with the World Organization for Peace, one of the many groups behind the Filter Hotel. Once new guests have washed up, they're led to chairs in a well-spaced waiting area, where Mani explains the dynamic here. Every guest goes through a health screening, then is assigned a private room, where they'll quarantine for 14 days. Leticia Chavarria is the hotel's medical coordinator.
We're taking migrants off the street and away from the risk of potential infection.
There is an isolation wing for people with COVID symptoms or who've come into contact with someone who's infected. Protocols are strict. Once a doctor goes up to the isolation area, she can't come down until her shift's over. Anything she needs gets sent up in a bucket on the end of a rope. A makeshift elevator, Chavarria laughs, a solution born out of necessity. There's room for 108 guests here. Right now, it's about 3/4 full. Some of them, because of a Trump administration policy, are forced to wait in Mexico as their asylum cases play out in the U.S. The coronavirus pandemic's made paying rent elsewhere nearly impossible. Others, like this Honduran woman, have been rapidly expelled from the border under a public health directive issued as concern about COVID-19 increased. She asked us not to use her name out of fear for her family's safety. Standing outside her room, she takes in the fresh air while her 4-year-old son plays behind her, stacking blocks into small towers. She says she sold candy in Honduras, earning just enough to get by. Then a local gang tried to extort her. When she couldn't pay,
they told me I had less than 12 hours to leave my country or they would kill me, along with my children.
She fled before the pandemic, but by the time she arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, officials were turning nearly all unauthorized migrants away, including asylum seekers. Authorities now take down basic information in the field, then almost immediately send most people back into Mexico or put them on a flight to their home country. This Honduran mother says she was detained after crossing the border.
They grabbed me worse than you would an animal.
She claims she was left with bruises and ripped clothes. Officials took her photo and fingerprints, she says, then dropped her on an international bridge without explanation.
They didn't tell me anything. They just did that without giving me any reason. It was really ugly.
Mexican officials brought her to the Filter Hotel. She tells me she's grateful to be here, but isn't sure what's next.
I can't go back to my country.
For 2 weeks at least, her family has a safe place to stay. Small touches make the hotel feel more homey, like flower pots on the windowsill. Her kids painted them during an outdoor art class, led from a distance by a volunteer teacher. They all get food and medical care, including twice-daily checkups from volunteer doctors. Eunice Gonzalez is one of six doctors, all women, who work here. Gonzalez identifies with the guests. She's an asylum seeker. She left Cuba last year and has been living in Juarez waiting for her U.S. court dates.
It had been more than a year since I'd practiced medicine. You miss your profession because medicine is a profession that you study, but also that you feel, and you like helping people.
When she heard the Filter Hotel needed doctors, she was eager to sign up. It may not seem like much, she says, but monitoring people for 14 days means when they go back into the community, they won't be spreading coronavirus.
For me, it's a huge honor to get up every day at 6 in the morning, get ready, come here, and put on my white coat. There's no comparison.
Gonzalez's next hearing is in July, though it's not clear if all immigration courts will reopen by then.
Sometimes you lose hope because it's been very hard, but I haven't considered giving up my case.
And for now, this hotel has given her a sense of purpose and given so many others a place to shelter while they wait. I'm Mallory Falk in Ciudad Juarez.
The art community in Fort Worth is still processing the death of Jeremy Joel. The 37-year-old artist was found dead in his apartment on May 29th. The cause of death hasn't been disclosed. As KEI's Miguel Perez reports, the self-taught painter was one of the city's most promising talents.
Jeremy Joel was a street artist, well-versed in graffiti, before he turned his attention to the canvas.
He would paint something, and then he would, cover up most of it.
Shasta Hobrick is a friend. She helps run Art Tooth, a nonprofit in Fort Worth.
And so he just kept layering and layering and layering and, adding imagery on top of imagery.
Jay Wilkinson says the only way for Joel to finish a piece was to take it away from him. The Fort Worth painter was one of his closest collaborators.
But he would always include the bus routes that he would take, things people said to him, the address to homes he lived at or phone numbers, all those places and all those moments that he had.
Joel's works, rough, playful, and ever-changing, offer glimpses into a life full of highs and lows. His three children would often show up in his work, and he also documented his experiences with poverty and addiction. Lauren Childs, owner of the Fort Works Art Gallery, represented Joel.
And so I wanted him to do more of the story themes, but they were hard for him because they were about such heavy content, like growing up with addiction, growing up without money, growing up struggling, growing up without a lot of support for him as an artist or growing up as a young father.
Joel always came to bat for Fort Worth. His biannual art show, Pass the Peas, brings artists from all over the country to the city, and he was making strides in the commercial art world, too. Child says his desire to make great art was matched only by his love for his children.
And he always wanted to be a better father. I want to make work, and I want to be an inspiration to my kids, and I want them to see that you can come from nothing and, create something enormous and magical.
Well, Joel certainly left his magic touch on Fort Worth. I'm Miguel Perez in Dallas.
We have more memories of Joel and examples of his work at artandseek.org. And sports are making return to North Texas after months of absence due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Texas Motor Speedway hosted an IndyCar race last weekend. And as KEI's Miranda Suarez reports, the Charles Schwab Challenge Golf Tournament, which started today in Fort Worth, is capturing national attention.
Golf is a notoriously quiet sport. But this week, there won't even be light clapping from spectators, because spectators aren't allowed. It's one of the social distancing precautions in place at the Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Fort Worth is the first city to host a stop on the PGA Tour since tournament play was suspended in March. The top five players in the world golf rankings will compete in the tournament, which is expected to lead to a spike in television audience for an event that rarely draws such big names. I'm Miranda Suarez in Fort Worth.
This morning at the golf tournament, players stopped for a moment of silence to honor George Floyd. At 5:58, this is KERA News.